people and from what I understand, characteristic of the town of North Andover. I'd also like to thank Dan Desmond for taking time today. He was my chauffeur and took me all around town. And from one old high school principal to another, it was very enjoyable. And I'd like to thank the town of Andover, particularly this board, for allowing me to get to this level. So, to them, then, no matter what the outcome is, it's been a very positive experience for me. And I just want to thank you and let you know everyone along the way has been great, and I appreciate that. Some of this will be redundant because several members were on the subcommittee. Schools in Reading, Massachusetts. Reading is an outstanding community, and the reason I applied for this particular position is similarities between Reading and North Andover. Reading is about 4,281 students, and they're 4,291 students. Our per pupil is within $79 of each other. And so I'm working basically with the same budget and the same money that you folks have. We have a lot of commonalities in the socioeconomic makeup of the students. What intrigued me about this particular position is that in my research, I spent 3 weekends at the library researching the town and reading the North Andover Citizen and the Trib Badlands last year, learning about the community. I believe that I have the intellectual knowledge, the academic background, and an 8-year success story in Reading of improving instruction. I believe that North Andover is a great school district. I think that it's one of those top-tier districts that are in Massachusetts. But I also think that my proven record of academic success and the knowledge of how kids learn, how teachers teach, can help me to come into North Andover and improve instruction and move it to the next level. Reading's MCAS scores are 24th in the state, North Andover's are 57. Our SAT scores are slightly higher than yours, and I believe I have the knowledge base of being able to put together some comprehensive programs using pretty much the money that we have here. I think you have a very strong parental support group, and so all of these. The other reason is the high school. I'm presently looking at a $55 million renovation on a new building on February 25th in Reading. And given the economy and everything else, it's very chancy. Our building was built in 1950. I've been spending a lot of time working on building projects because I'm the largest school system in Massachusetts with no business manager. I have what you have without a business manager. So in fact, I have a strong financial background. I know how budgets are built, I know where the money is, where it should go, and I've been very successful with that, even turning back several dollars at the end of every year. I also know how to move forward in a process where each year the principals are asked to give on July 1st 25% of their budget in a hold, so that if we have a problem later in the year and the TAM can help us out, we can use that money to offset our other problems in our budget. I've done that for 8 consecutive years, and in this budget, that's going to be helpful. Finally, I have an academic preparedness that's not around school administration. My PhD is around curriculum and instruction, and I have a master's degree in reading. So I have a strong background on how children learn and how people teach. Finally, I believe there's an opportunity here. I'm excited about that opportunity to help a school system, which I think is a great school system, possibly go to the next level. And I appreciate that opportunity.
Can you please say your education background?
Sure. I have a Bachelor of Science degree from Central Connecticut State College in history. I have a master's degree in reading. I have a CAGS, which is an advanced degree, from the University of Connecticut in Curriculum and Instruction, and I have a PhD in Curriculum and Instruction Administration from the University of Connecticut.
And prior to becoming superintendent of the schools in Reading, can you walk us through a little bit of your employment?
Sure. This is actually the first job I've ever applied for where I wasn't either getting laid off and needed to go to the next step, so it's a little unusual. I started as a classroom teacher in 1974 in New Britain, at New Britain High School in New Britain, Connecticut, a heavy urban high school. I was laid off 4 times in 2 years. Each time, the first time they made a mistake, so they had to rescind it and then send it back out again. In 1976, I went to Newington, Connecticut, which is similar to Reading, similar to North Andover. And for about two and a half years, served as a classroom teacher of history social studies. I was approached by the superintendent and asked to open up an alternative high school. And for a year and a half, I became the director of the Newington Alternative Program. In 1980, I became certified as an administrator in Connecticut and sought and was successful in obtaining a position as assistant principal at Windsor Locks High School in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. I served in all capacities there. At the end of 2 years there, I was laid off. Downsizing, Connecticut has administrative certification K-12 for principals, not like Massachusetts, which has it by level, so I was bumped by an elementary principal. Spent most of the summer trying to get reemployed during a very difficult time, and ended up in Middletown, Connecticut, at Woodrow Wilson High School as a assistant principal. There were 2 high schools, and I went to Woodrow Wilson. After a year, the superintendent there chose to make a decision to merge Woodrow Wilson and Middletown High School together, and he asked me to become the principal of the new high school. And in 1983, I was made the principal to be, and the following year I became principal of the high school. Interesting experience for merging 2 urban high schools together. Awesome football teams first and second year. But it was a successful merger. I then wanted to go to the next level, which was to have more impact on learning on a district-wide basis. And as you know, in the early 90s, with cutbacks and things like that, if you want to go to the central office, you really have to seek out positions. I was offered several positions, always retained, always had my Massachusetts certification. I like Massachusetts. And so our family moved to Beverly, Massachusetts. I became the assistant superintendent of schools in Beverly in 1991. Through some changes on the board, the superintendent had to leave in 1993. I was made interim superintendent. A week later, 650 teachers went on strike while I was interim superintendent. I have a disclaimer letter if anyone would like it. It had nothing to do with that teacher's strike. And I learned a lot. I think I'm the only active superintendent in Massachusetts who's been through that. Quite an experience. But it taught me a lot about teachers, respect, boards, and things like that. I decided to apply to school systems, and the old adage is the first time superintendents need to apply west of 495 so you can get on the other side of 495. I chose to find a quality district first time out. It took several years. I ended up in Reading. I've been very lucky to be in Reading. During that period of time, we've done a lot. We built a brand new middle school, renovated a middle school, renovated one elementary school. We have a brand new elementary school we'd like to move forward. We'll find out on the 25th. High school project in another school to be renovated. We've made major changes in the curriculum in the school district. We now have a spiral curriculum, K through 12. It's connected, and I think if you check state testing, you'll see we have some of the best test scores in Massachusetts.
Thank you.
Billy?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. So you've had the opportunity to visit our community. You've visited several of our schools and talked to a number of different people. In addition, we are sure you have been investigating our community while being considered in the position of superintendent of schools. Please share your initial perceptions and opinions
of what they were calling schools, including perceived strengths in
areas requiring improvement.
Okay. Let me first do the strengths. I think you have an outstanding faculty. I think it's competitive and comparable to some of the top school districts. Certainly, I think it's as good as anything I've seen. I think you have proven leaders in place who can move the school district forward. I think you have an incredible base of parents. The amount of volunteerism and your active participation in the schools, I think, puts you folks in a very, very high tier. Your attractiveness as a community is your buildings. outside of maybe one or two, the schools are in very good shape. The flagship of the district is probably the best looking high school I've ever seen, and I'm the next high school principal. Its shape, its design, and the fact that you're getting one of the last field houses in Massachusetts, it's no small feat. I think that it's a community that believes in education. I believe it's a community that supports education. And I think you have initiatives in place, both with your math program, your language arts program, and other initiatives I've read and seen over the past month that I think are excellent starts. The areas where I would come in and attempt to try to improve is the relationship between the boards, particularly the Board of Selectmen and the School Committee, the relationship between the Taxpayers Association and the School Committee, the general tone within the community. I think that given these economic times, there's a lot of energy being used right now that's causing us to use energy in other directions that could be best used for the children of North Andover. I have a proven record of working in that kind of situation and helping to improve it. I believe that if you look at the interview group that I sat with last Friday, the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, the chairman of the FinCon, two school committee members, they were the major stakeholders of the school system sitting in that room. And that group was all working on a very focused point, the highest paid official in the town of North Andover. And so it works. It can work. I believe I have the ability, the knowledge, the time, the energy to make that happen in this community. I work about an 85-hour week. I worked last year 162 nights. If I could just add one little piece. Something I would very much like to do, if the board approves it, is an entry plan. And that would be something to bring the strengths and improvements together. There's a man who wrote a book, Barry Jentz, called Entry. What it basically says is that leaders like the four people that are being interviewed last night and tonight are high-powered people with a great deal of skill and knowledge with proven records of success. How do we get their style to fit in this culture? And so what the entry plan does is it affords an individual who uses it the ability during a three-month period to interview 1,000 or 2,000 people and ask four questions. What do you like? What don't you like? What's most important to you? What are you most proud of? And what are your expectations of the superintendent? I did this when I came to Ray. When new leaders come into a community, people run up and say, listen to me. This is what you need to do. This affords someone like myself the ability to listen to all the stakeholders. And then somewhere around December, I would publish what I heard about these four things. And then I would ask the board, the community as a whole, to validate my findings. And then that would become our plan for the next 3 to 5 years. And when people began to deviate from that, you would ask them, if you participated in this, be a part of that. So those are the things I see as your strengths and your weaknesses. And if you know anything about the town of Reading, and if you've done any research, you'll see that there's a lot of commonalities in those kind of issues in both communities. And I've been very successful in the town of Reading.
Thank you. Bruce?
Dr. Hartung, I'd like you to please describe your vision of what you think an ideal public school system looks like and how it operates. You need to talk about how you would involve various stakeholders in achieving that vision, the parents, the school staff, and other members of the community.
Using this entry plan as a foothold, I would hope to have interviewed the Clergy Association, the Realtors Association, virtually every stakeholder connected directly or indirectly to the town of Reading. Through that initial contact, which would be very positive, I would bring those things together in many different ways. An example would be to go back to those particular communities which have, or those stakeholders which have a direct impact with school, and find if I can develop a schedule where I can meet with them on a regular basis. I have found in Reading, I meet with the Clergy Association 2 or 3 times a year. I find that kind of input to find out about the children in Reading and how they are acting outside the school and what issues they have so I can bring them into school. a perfect system would be one where budgets weren't an issue, but budgets are an issue. So one of the things that I would do is I would revisit every purchase. I would sit down and look and make sure that we're very focused. If we can't buy a little of a lot, then let's buy a lot of something very tight. An example would be, I believe we move forward initiatives, curriculum initiatives. I move forward a language arts initiative, Scholastic, that cost about $1.2 million in 4 years, given the same similar budget. I did that by pulling that out, just like the fire chief has a fire truck, or the police chief has brand new cruisers. This curriculum initiative was important for the school system. And so we presented it to the community as a whole, not as bits and pieces, and the community endorsed it. As I said, I'm out 165 nights a year. I do every PTO, I do every school council, I do every faculty, Rotary, every group in town at least once or twice a year. I use that to find out how we're doing as a dipstick, as a school system. The Realtors Association is a great place to find out what people really believe about your school system, because they're the ones that have to sell that school system to potential people coming in. I'd like to see a school system where it's collaborative. My leadership style is to keep the board continuously informed. As I said, this is the only job I've ever applied for in 8 years, probably the only job I will. I went to my board a month ago and asked to go out to dinner with each one and explain why I wanted to do it and to get feedback on it. So all my board members knew even before I applied or even put papers what I was thinking. I did the same thing with the principals as a group too. I keep people informed. I call my board 3 times a week. Every board member knows everything that's going on, what they need to know, how they need to know, so they don't get in the call in the middle of the night. I'd like to see a school system where there's incremental improvement, and improvement that can be counted on a budget, so that when we put a brand new program together, we can count on the funding in a continuous basis. The language arts program that's in the school district, the literacy program, could be something that would fall under the acts in budget cuts. If I was the superintendent, I would do everything I can to save it, because the credibility of teachers, if teachers see a program we've put in taken away, it's very hard the second time to come back and get that another program implemented. I'd like to see a lot of opportunities to teach that. One of the things I do every year is every new teacher in the school district that's brought in, 6 to 7 weeks after they become a teacher in the school system, I bring them in small groups of 4 or 5 and do like the Japanese CEOs do with the people on the floor. I give them a cup of coffee, I talk to them, and I say, before you become too red-eyed, tell me what you see here from your previous experience. I know that's okay, Al, but graduate ready. So we get them in. You know, going to a teacher of 10 years, they see what I see. Going to a teacher of 6 weeks, who comes from another school system, they really give us a lot of opportunities. We ask our PTOs to become active players in the school system. You have a base of business here that I don't have, so I would like to start a business council with the school department. I'd like to see every school adopted by a business, with possibly Verizon taking the high school if it hasn't already done so. I'd like to see that partnership become a business administrator council that met on a monthly basis to support teacher initiatives in the classroom. A teacher who wants to try something different in the classroom that I can't fund could be funded through this business administrator partnership to the school department. I have a proven record of doing that. I've not been as lucky in Reading, as Al knows, we've got a big pizza shop. You need a pizza, go to Reading. But if businesses go, you don't have a lot of businesses. I'd like to see a school system where people can make mistakes, admit the mistakes, cut our losses, and move on. Too often in education, we do things that don't work, and we try to reshape it so it looks like it works. There's a little bit of business in me that says, once I know it isn't working, how many times does a horse have to be on its back before we know it's gone? Cut our losses and move on. So it would be a very collaborative school system that's very open for input, and that the student is in the middle with the teacher on one side of the triangle, the parent at the top, and the school committee to the right of that.
Thank you.
Dr. Latini, would you address that to become the standard by which school performance is measured? I've got a three-part question. The first is it fair that the MCAS test has become the predominant measure of performance? Secondly, what other tools ought to be utilized to measure performance? And finally, how should test data be used diagnostically to measure performance and also to foster achievement?
My position is never changed. I believe that the MCAS test is an excellent test. It does a great job, but no single test should be the determinant of whether a person who's given 13 years of pretty good ability not be allowed to graduate. I'm on record with the commissioner with that. I'm in a school district where we have a real possibility that every student is going to graduate this year. I'm down to five, and I have a strong belief that those students, with the things we've done, that they will probably pass. But to tell a young person who doesn't learn best through a test, a portfolio, a student who's a great draw, a band student, outstanding musical programs here, outstanding drama program, those aren't measured. It's the same thing as the teacher test. You can't test for imagination. You can't test for sensitivity. You can't test for nurturing. And so I think the MCAS test is an excellent test, but I think it needs to be combined with other things like a portfolio. And I think more local discretion should be given because we know the students of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Other tests, one of the things that we've done is, like most school systems, we have a series of tests. And what's happening is they're starting to rub against other tests like the MCAS. So what we're doing now with No Child Left Behind, the President's initiative that requires testing, is we're waiting for that to come in. And then we're going to go out and put committees together that will identify tests that will do things that we want it to do. Example, we give the Stanford 9s in grade 6. We do that because we can get a turnaround in a few months to tell us how those students are going to do. As more and more of the testing comes in, either through the MCAS or No Child Left Behind, we need to evaluate that. So what I'm doing in Reading is going to teachers at different grade levels and asking them, what information do you need and when do you need it that will help you to do a better job with the student? In some cases, tests that are offered in the same year on the front end is a good time to do it, and some should be done the previous year. We're also looking at testing prior to sixth grade and testing prior to ninth grade, a battery of tests that allows the teachers in the sixth and ninth grade to have a much better understanding of the student. The best thing about giving the Stanford in sixth grade is that the teacher has the student for one quarter before the test results come in. So the teacher doesn't base the student's performance on just the test, that is it on the record. So if the teacher has an academic and then the test comes in and they match, that's a good thing. If there's a difference, then we need to look at it. Particularly on a student who's doing well academically and poorly on the Stanford, it tells us that that child's learning style is not going to be best assessed through a test, and it may need a portfolio or something like that. How to use it? I think I answered part of that, but let me give you a more complete answer. I believe test scores are like checking the oil of a car. I think you do it to make sure there's oil in there because it's one component of the entire car. But there is no one single test that can tell me the success of any students. I constantly let kindergarten parents come to me and say, can't you give a child a test to determine whether they're ready because they're a month off on the entrance day? If I could develop a test that could tell me what a five-year-old was going to be doing his senior year in high school, okay, I wouldn't be sitting here tonight. I'd be making serious money at Bolton Edmund. So the point is, a test is just an indicator. It's a high watermark. One of the things that I would like to explore, and I have explored in Reading, is to look more at portfolio in conjunction with standardized testing. So the students are giving a much broader approach to the assessment that was being done of any student.
Thank you. Paul?
The community in North Andover, I'm sure, similarly to Reading, the vast majority of the people in the community are not parents of children in the schools. Yet those, the entire community is actually under the financial burden of supporting the schools. How can we best report back to that community the benefit that is being realized for the very significant dollars, the lion's share of an annual budget that is being spent on the schools? How can we show them this is where the dollars are going and this is the benefit that is being realized? And when we need to go to the town and say, for X, Y, or Z purpose, there are additional dollars required, how do we demonstrate in measurable ways the real benefit that's going to accrue from those additional expenditures?
We're about 23% of our community.
We're 20.
And that's high. Most communities are 18 to 15. I think the best way to do that is to show that the schools are more than just the 4,300 kids in it. Example, a program I initiated down in Connecticut in a heavily senior community was to, 2 weeks after school opened, is to print in the newspaper a list of those courses that people in the community could take. You might have a class that's 18 to 20, and it may be a business class, it could be a math course. And we would offer it to members of the North Andover community at no charge. One of the things that that does, it changes the tone of the high school. It's pretty impressive to have an 83-year-old grandmother sitting next to you in a math class when you're using the F word and you look over and say, I'm sorry, okay? It works, and you get somewhere between 30 or 40 people for something like that. Those people, when you go to town meeting and ask for things, when you go out to the community, those are the people who sit in the front row and say, I don't want my math class cut. At the same time, we've done a lot with the other departments in the town, utilizing our facilities for training purposes for both police and fire. This high school is air conditioned. There is no reason why this high school could not be used 12-7, 24-7, 12 months of the year, and open it up to community groups, and open it up to as many people as long as, you know, they're covering our costs and everything else. The other thing is the realtors. I think most school systems underutilize realtors. If you have a bad school system, there's a high correlation to your property value. There was a period of time a few years ago where buying a house in Reading was so difficult that realtors had to give prospective clients beepers so when the property went online, it could be beeped to go to the location. This is a begging community to a lot more companies and things like that. I want to see those companies choosing North Andover to bring in highly intelligent, highly motivated, and people who spend money to this community. And so I want to show our school system at the highest level. I want the physical grounds of the schools to be open places for children to use, for grandparents to come in, to be an active participant both in and out of the building. The other thing I do is that we do a lot of senior events. We have a senior prom where you have to bring your grandmother or your grandfather to a dance at the high school. It works really, really well. It's our best dance of the year, at least discipline-wise. And it works very, very well. We also encourage our middle school students to go down to the Council on Aging several times a year and serve meals, prepare meals, make cards. We also, in our elementary schools in Reading, have specific high water marks where we invite people into the school system, particularly grandparents and things like that, to see performances in the school. And you know, one of the things we try to do is make sure that we give them a cup of coffee, that they have a seat to sit in. You know, we invite a whole bunch of community people, and it's cold in the room, there's no cup of coffee, and there's no place to sit. You've sort of defeated your purpose and what you're doing. The other thing that I do is, as the educational leader in Reading, I'm out in the community a lot. It's not uncommon for me to go down Main Street and just talk to businessmen about our kids. When we have early release day, inevitably my secondary principals get calls that, you know, the middle school kids are downtown or the high school kids are downtown, things like that. So we work very hard with the business community to fix those things. Example, I have a brother apparently at my Joshua Eaton School that broke. A woman wrote a note to the director of maintenance that said, the gutter's been broke for a week, you haven't fixed it, I'm putting it in writing, so you have to take care of it. While we went, we looked up, we found out she's an 81-year-old retired teacher who lives near the school. Now, right now, to go out and fix a gutter, you can't do it. So what we did is we called her up, we told her when we would fix it, and we thanked her and we sent her a letter for pointing that out to us. You know, a lot of times we get aggravated when somebody in the community says, no, you know, look at this. I think that we need to encourage that. I mean, we've got 4,300 kids that are out there every day. And everyone blames the school department if they're doing something wrong. We need to take care of that from both ends. So that's another thing. Another thing I do is I am in the schools all the time. All the time. There's not a child in the Reading Public Schools above kindergarten that doesn't know who Dr. Hertoon is. In my packet for you this evening, I have a Reading rocket pin. One of the things I do is I go into the schools two or three times a month, sometimes five or six. I go around the classrooms, I ask the teachers permission to go in and talk to the kids, I ask them questions, and I give them rocket pins. When I go to public events where there are non-students, I give out rocket pins so that people feel they're part of a community, part of a school community, and that the people who wear it, you know, people who have nothing to do with the school department. So as the educational leader of the school department, I set the tone for what you're talking about. And I've seen our principals initiate more community-based things. The last one I'd like to try, they haven't done up here, but they did down in Connecticut, was a day where we would bring in professionals from the community. You know, somebody wants to be an architect. So there's an architect in Reading that we bring in, Lefanda Beretta, we bring in. There's a doctor. And we would either at the high school or the middle school create a schedule where students could go 4 or 5 weeks, pick the professions you want, and hear an FBI agent speak, hear someone from the consulate speak, an investment broker, and things like that. So there's a whole series of things that I've used in my past that have been very successful in helping the community connect. Finally, a couple times a year I ask the community if there's something we should do that we're not doing. And amazingly enough, people do send us something. We need to take a look.
Thank you.
Yeah. Al? You've already spoke a little bit about the new high school. It's going to be the jewel of this community. It's a $58 million investment that has got all state-of-the-art technology, classrooms with walls, and 21st century vision. It's going to be outstanding. However, with the economic climate here, forecast being a little bit rugged, we're going to have a school that's going to be full of students, but we may have a shortage of manpower to fully utilize that building. How are you going to prioritize programs? And secondly, there's been a large discussion about changing the program of the high school from 45-minute periods up to block scheduling. How do you feel about that?
Well, let me do the block scheduling first, and I'll do the budget test. In 1993, we started when I was in Beverly on the block scheduling. And I was interim superintendent when we did it, and we implemented it. We initially did it because it's a cost savings. There are 7 periods a day with 5 minutes passing. You go to block scheduling, you can eliminate 15, you can add 15 minutes more instruction, and with the new 990, some school districts utilize it. No program and nothing works if people don't want it to work. So we need to convince people that this is a better way. I know that Susan has done a lot of professional development, and I know there's some people that still have questions about it. We're asking people, some people who've worked a number of years, to take what they've created in a 45-minute program and try to make it into a 90-minute program. That takes a lot of work. I want teachers to take 2 45s and teach them in a 90-minute block. we'll lose kids. And we have to be particularly sensitive to the children who have low attention span. Some of our students who cannot sit in the class for 45 minutes are now being asked to do 90. Part of that professional development talks about cooperative learning. We have to move away from teachers teaching a full 45 minutes chalking class, where they lecture for 45 minutes. There needs to be more cooperative learning among the students. The research shows that if a teacher introduces a concept and allows children to work in groups, sometimes those children can actually reinforce the concept at a better rate and faster rate than the teacher, because kids do understand kids. And I would encourage that we look at that. The program in Beverly, it took a number of years. Nobody is going to marry it in the first couple of years. But I think that through support for Susan, for the staff, constantly asking Susan and the staff what we can do, I think we can make it happen. The second piece is that there may be aspects of that that we might need to tweak. An example is, as I talked about at the other interview, is that I've seen a program where, particularly with ninth graders, where instead of putting in a block, you continue the middle school concept. It's called clustering. And you put particularly low-level ninth grade students in almost a middle school style of four teachers, and you keep them among those four teachers. Because that transition is very difficult. And one of the things we've seen is we've seen a reduction in suicide, loss of self-worth, academic dropout, and those kind of things. So we need to constantly look at this. There's not one model that works for every kid and every teacher. But on the other hand, the block scheduling is an outstanding program for humanities. The ability to take Algebra 2 and Chemistry and meld it together and have two teachers work together in a multi-course program. An archaeology course where students can spend 90 minutes. In my previous experience, we actually built an archaeological dig area that was 5 feet deep, and we put things in there, and kids learned how to do those kind of things. So we can do some exciting things in the 90 minutes. We just need the most important piece is to be sensitive to the administration and the staff, as not to pour it down their throats with a funnel, but to begin the incremental process. Now, I know there's been a lot of staff development, but like kids, everybody's got a different learning curve than the adults, and we need to be sensitive to that. The budget. One of the things that, and I think Steve might have said this at the other interview, is I think Redding's about 2 years ahead of North Andover. Though you have 27 square miles and 9,000 buildable lots, we're 9 square miles and there's probably less than one buildable lot. It's pretty dense. And so our new growth is 100,000 or less each year. Your new growth this year is 650, but last year was 900,000. Okay? Your free cash is about a million. That's, well, ours isn't there anymore, but yours is about a million. Ours was a million. So we need to look at how new growth, and when it happens, is consistent when we do our leaps in schools. These are good times right now to strengthen what we have. At some point, we're going to pull out of this. North Andover is an extremely appealing community. You have condos going up, I believe, in 114. You have others going up on 125. The number of students who are going to come off of that are pretty small. They generally, people with children are going into that. So there's an opportunity where some new growth and revenue may be coming in, and it won't have a big impact on the schools. The last piece is we've gotten very creative in creating revenue. Special ed in particular. There's nobody that I know of who can stop special ed from increasing. It just does. We are finding new ways to identify disabilities. We're finding new disabilities, and as those continue, and we're finding at an early age, we're going to have to address it. So what we've done in Reading is to, rather than take one or two of our students and send them off to a special ed consortium or a private, we go out and hire a $45,000 teacher and $15,000 paraprofessional and go sell slots to Linfield, Wakefield, and surrounding community and we've been able to generate a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, and we're hoping to continue that. Now, this past year, they caught up with us. They're starting to develop those programs that we have. So now we're finding new programs. The other thing is I have a neuropsych. A neuropsych being someone who can really help us out in the SPED area. I've been able to save a lot of money. One of the things is we're one of the few school systems that has a neuropsych. And so one of the things we're looking at is to use the neuropsych half-time in Reading and sell his time for the surrounding towns. And their cost or their payment would pay for his entire salary. Sponsorships, organizations, adopting schools, those kind of things. But the way that I set priorities is through the administrative council of all the principals and the SPED director. And so any initiative in any school passes muster with all the principals. So there's never any bickering that school got it, this school didn't get it. Everyone knows and everyone agrees to it. And we move initiatives forward, whether it be the high school and the middle school, as a whole, and we do it well. And if we can't do all of it, we do the piece we need to do. Thanks.
Brian, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I have just one question. In 3 years, how would you define success for your superintendency?
I would say that the town of North Andover can expect success in 3 to 5 years. Okay, I think 3 might be on the lean, 5 is right at the top. In 3 to 5 years, I would expect the school committee and the community to see incremental improvement across the board in test scores. I would hope that through a lot of work, that the relationship between the boards, the town, and the individuals would come down to a better level. In my readings, I read people were concerned that some of the letters to the editor may result in superintendent candidates withdrawing, so could we stop writing nasty letters at least until the superintendents are picked and we go back to doing it.
You weren't supposed to read those.
The internet is a wonderful tool. I really want people to find the entire school system as a crown jewel. And so one of the things that I would probably do is somewhere in the fourth or fifth year, I would redo my entry plan. I would go ask people the same 4 questions. What do you like? What don't you like? What are you most proud of? And what are your expectations for me? And it would be an attempt to find out what we've accomplished from the original plan in 2003 and what the new plan in 2008 should look like. You know, I think the best example is the simple thing I do with new teachers and bringing them in off for a cup of coffee. I do that with selectmen. I do that with FinCom members. I do that with parents. I go out to schools before school starts and after, so you know, parents kind of talk there, meet, and cause this huge traffic jam. I like to stand up there and talk to parents and say, what do you think? And you'd be surprised the number of grandparents that are out there, not just parents. And they have a lot to say about the school district. So there's normal test scores. There's certainly MCAS. There's our per pupil. You know, is our per pupil going up and our scores are not? What I'd like to see is our per pupil go up incrementally and our scores go up 2 and 3-fold. But more importantly is to ask the community. You know, what does the community, do they think we're doing a good job? I don't have a criteria because the community has always been my criteria. As a public official for 28 years, it doesn't matter what I think. It's always been the customers, it's usually the community.
Thank you.
Bruce?
Yes. We organize our school system in a certain way. We have 5 elementary schools, we have a middle school, and we have a high school. And sometimes I wonder if we don't deliver a curriculum that's disjointed because of that. And I'm not sure if that's the case, but I heard you speak earlier about the idea of a spiral curriculum, one that links quite intentionally a K through 12 educational program. I'd like to hear you talk about that. Sure. What are the advantages and disadvantages, the obstacles, and what characterizes that type of curriculum?
It's not only a good practice that was spiral curriculum, but it's a lot cheaper. When I came to Reading in 1995, there were 92 elementary teachers with 93 different language arts programs. We had everything from whole language to quasi-home language to basal-based, the phonics, I mean, it was all over the place. And quite frankly, it was causing our special ed numbers to go up. Because it was so disjointed, the vocabulary we were using in first grade had no similarity in second grade. In some cases, among the first grade, it wasn't the same. So what we did is we sat down with our teachers and said, we don't have a lot of money, but if we pick a program, we'll buy the right program, and we'll have you, the teacher, have a lot of input into it. We've done that in math, we've done that in science, and we've done that, we're studying language arts now. We did the same thing at the high school. And so the high school's department heads and the middle school teachers and the elementary teachers who are in the area of a particular content, math, let's say, meet once a month to talk about what's going on. And before we buy any new items for the school system, it has to go through that group, but ultimately it goes through the principals, K through 12. We now have a science program that's extremely consistent. We also have new books at the high school. Again, using the same money that you have. We have new equipment at the high school. The elementary people were part of that decision. They knew what we were going to buy. They knew the product we were going to buy. You know, it doesn't do any good to use Forrester at the middle school for Algebra 1 and to use Silver Burdett at the high school for Algebra 1. There needs to be a lot of communication. And I have a background in that, and I know how to do that. What's the advantage? The advantage is that all the schools begin to look the same. When I came to Reading, there was one school that was the language arts school. There was another school that was the computer school. There was another school that was considered the art school. And that's the way the town and the schools were explained to me. I defy anybody to go to any one of the seven schools in Reading and say, this school is better than any or this one. The commonality, it also stops parents who sit outside and say, well, how come you're not doing that at our school? Okay? And that was a big issue. You know, one principal would buy the entire Chicago math program with all the manipulatives, the calculators, and the software. The other principal was more language arts. So he only bought $25,000 of the Chicago math program and put the rest into the language arts. That's why we pulled it all out. We created a central office account called Curriculum Initiatives. We take it to the board and say to the board, we're doing language arts this year, K-2, and here's what we'll buy. Twice a year, if I became the superintendent with approval of the board, twice a year, once in October and once in May, I put an entire night aside for all the curriculum people to come in. And in September, it would be telling me the things we're going to do, and in May, it would be the things that we were able to accomplish. It is one of the most watched, attended school committee meetings in Reading. We bring in a few elementary teachers. We talk about the science program, and they sit there with the middle school teachers, and they sit there with the high school department head, and they talk about it. So the board's hearing about the articulation, the community's hearing about the articulation. And everybody does their little thing, and whatever initiative the school committee approved in the previous budget in April for town meeting, that group is given an hour. And in the last couple of years, language arts. We've been in a couple, one primary, one intermediate teacher. They give a whole classroom presentation. They show how the stuff is done and what's going on. The last piece is that you need to do a better job articulating to the community. Good example. We take the Chicago math program. It's not like the math that we learned when we were kids. It's a very different math program. The homework is very different. There is nothing more frustrating for a parent to want to really get involved in helping their child's homework when they don't have a clue, and this is second grade. And so one of the things we've done, is we hold workshops for parents to explain what we're doing, how it works. It causes less anxiety. Because the first thing a parent does, and they can't do the homework, because the son or daughter is saying, you know, Mom, Dad, you don't know what you're doing. Now, I'm not sure a 45-year-old person paying $8,000 in taxes wants to hear that from their 10-year-old. And so what we've done is we've done workshops. We actually, believe it or not, this year, did a videotape that we're now going to use in September. So parents put a schedule out that says, if you're interested in our Chicago math program, this videotape will be playing on RCTV these nights. If you're interested in our language arts program, the tape will be playing. It's much more cost efficient because I have to pay teachers to go out sometimes to do these things. And so what happens is if you miss it and RCTV doesn't play it, you can come to the school because each of the schools have copies of the tapes and you can pick it up and we just ask you to bring it back. There's nothing that I can find in all my research in 28 years that says letting teachers go do their own thing works. We're a connected school system. We don't have a lot of money. And I believe me, if you allow people to do their own thing without some kind of spiral where everything's connected, I absolutely will have duplication through the school system. We have no more, you know, you shouldn't use Johnny Tremaine. I'm using Johnny Tremaine. It's all worked out in advance. Tonight you're going to see in the back room, I even have a list of what children learn in each grade level in the language arts program, so parents know right up front what the expectations are. We actually put something out for math, and we put something out for language arts that says an I, which means it's introduced, an R, that it's reinforced, and an M, the mastery should occur, and we have a range there. So that connection between the home and the school really takes a lot of anxiety out of the teachers.
Thank you very much.
Sure. You talk about how hard you work and you've got some very aggressive goals. You talk about your entry plan. What I haven't heard you talk about as much, and I'd be curious, and you know, I know we're getting towards time, but in terms of the management of your staff, in terms of the management of your principals, the management of the faculty, how do you go about that? What is your management style? What is your evaluation style? And how do you set the expectations for the school system staff that are going to meet these goals that you have?
One of the things I would encourage this district to do, it would be shortly after maybe the first year, to develop a strategic plan that outlines somewhere between 5 and 7 goals. One of the things is if a district doesn't have a strategic plan, then each school has its own goals, the superintendent has its own goals, or the principal has a goal, and it starts to look like the school council's improvement plans. One of the things we did is we spent a lot of time, we got over 400 people involved with our strategic plan. It took a long time. We developed a community-based strategic plan with 6 goals. We also put in a mission statement, beliefs, and what have you. And if I could just take a minute. We set high expectations, one goal. Set high expectations for all students using the Common Core of Learning. Ensure that the individual students or challenges, their needs and talents are addressed. Provide a learning environment for student success. With sufficient staff and well-maintained facilities. Provide modern equipment. Educate parents and community members. Continuing to move towards intimidation-free schools. I have every principal, actually every administrator in the school district, at the end of every school year, take every one of those goals and answer on how they've accomplished them at their building level. I've never had goals in the Reading Public Schools since this has come forward. My goals each year, my measurements on these. Some superintendents develop their own goals. And it'd be interesting to take his goals or her goals and compare them to all the other administrators, the teachers, and things like that. We don't have a lot of money, and you need to be running in the same direction. Now, getting to specific. The administrator is asking this, by the way.
I'm not surprised.
There are 5 or 6 key
items that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts have developed that all administrators should adhere to: educational leadership, educational organization. Every year, I take every one of the 25 administrators, and I evaluate them based on that. And what I do is, I write a page to a page and a half on each. Their evaluations are 6 to 8 pages narrative. I then put the goals that they've accomplished, and then I put recommendations. I send it off to the building principal or the administrator, and I give them 2 weeks to put anything on there they want. What they agree with, what they don't agree with, things they want me to add, things they want me to take off. When it comes back to me, if I agree with them, I just put them in. If I don't, we meet again. All administrators with less than 4 years are evaluated twice a year. I do it once this time of year and once in June. The other thing is that if it isn't working, you know, we utilize the first 3 years, which allows us to let a person go without professional teacher status. I can tell you that out of 350 teachers that are working around public schools, there's 160 without professional teacher status. And those people are constantly being reviewed by us. I hold principals very accountable. But we've also developed a system with the encouragement of the school committee of developing a stipend system for each principal and each administrator. The school committee gives me an amount of money, and in each September when I sit with the principals, I review their goals. And if they're doing their job, there is no additional money. And this is off the base. And it's small money. It's $500 to $2,000. Some people call it merit pay. But an example would be Susan Nickerson right now, the work she's putting in the high school, the work she will be putting on. We need to reward her for that in some small way with not a lot of money, but a recognition. Off the base, because once it's over with, we don't want it on there. So we do that. We also do a lot of recognition things, plaques, those kind of things, to give people a feeling. But I think if you talk to me when I'm ready, I'm a tough administrator. I hold extremely high standards. These children in that school district are really my major responsibility. I have 5,000 people I'm responsible for every day. I take that charge very seriously. I'm in the schools a lot, and there's not a lot that goes on, and there's a high level of accountability. There isn't much that I don't know about, and there isn't much the school committee doesn't know about. And it's that level of communication that keeps us all very, very
Tell me we're about out of time. Is there anything you want to add?
I brought tonight folders. The folders are pretty similar to the ones I left for Al and Bruce, but I did add something to it because I wanted to mention something. We developed a few years ago what I consider to be the harassment discrimination policy in the state. It's very comprehensive. It was developed with our teachers, with our administrators, and I have a copy for you tonight. This policy goes as far as to say that if you witness it and don't report it, you could be disciplined for not doing it. And we stand by it. And this has helped our district quite a bit to hold people accountable at a much higher level. I've included my entry plan from Reading. I've included our MCAS scores. I've included a district-wide calendar, something I mentioned before. One of the things is, how does a school system with only a few schools all have all the open houses on the same night? We got away from that by putting out a district calendar that tells people what's going on and all things. I have copies of our curriculum, specifically language arts, and I have copies of our high school program studies and our middle school. I'd just like to finish by saying that no matter what the outcome is, this has been a learning experience for me. I've enjoyed meeting with your staff. I've enjoyed my time reading the newspaper. It made me feel good sometimes. but I really believe that if you did some investigation, you'd find that I have all the background to come into North Andover, to have a very small delta between Dr. Allen leaving and I coming in, that I bring to North Andover, I believe, all the qualities you're looking for: strong leadership, someone who will take full responsibility for everything in the school department, someone who will keep you informed as a school committee, as administrators, and as a school department, And I think in the next 3 to 5 years, you can be very proud of the quality of education the children in Reading, or excuse me, in North Andover are getting. Again, I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.